transfer from the Department of Public Works to the construction fund.
Well, that took place, of course, in 1962. But Stony Brook started long before that. What wonder you was, oh yeah.
Well,
fund didn't get involved until 1962.
Who was involved from the university side in the earliest building? The library,
humanities, sciences,
and
housing.
Yes, and housing.
Well, first of all, the first thing we did was have a master plan for the campus that was developed.
Right.
And that was done by Warren Hutchins. That had done also the master plan for the Binghamton campus.
I see.
And that contract was through the Department of Public Works. And they did, to tell you the truth, the principal areas of their involvement in the master plan is what it is today. In other words, the location of the library and the fine arts and the central core was established by Moore and Hutchins, where it is today.
Yeah.
And the location of the humanity and the arts and the social sciences that were off in one particular wing that would be to the south is where it is today. And the sciences on that one side, the engineering on the other side, down the spine is what it is. The location of the service center was where it was determined by. There is a master plan and the housing, and as far as the loop road is concerned. So those basic things were done in the master plan, and it was initially built that way.
Yeah.
But what happened was that the intent of the university at that time was to hire a series of architectural firms to work on different entities. In other words, we were going to hire one firm, they were going to do the housing. They were going to hire another firm, they were going to do the central core, library, student activities, administration, that sort of thing. Another firm and do the arts and the humanities section, social science. Another one to do the engineering, another one to do the sciences, another one to do the road network and the service building, that type of thing. But what happened was in those early days, there was all of a sudden a great anxiety to get this particular college going. Well, we thought we were doing very well the direction we were going in, but quite frankly, politics got involved in the thing.
Is this Rockefeller?
No. Oh, this is pre-Rockefeller.
Oh, yes. Harriman.
Yes, this is back in Harriman, you know. I think the guy's name was, I hate to mention names, but I will because you're going to edit these things, but I think the guy's name was Grill. I mention this only because, things are popping into my head. You got to understand how things go.
Sure.
And,
Is he counsel?
No. Grill was, I think he was appointed as the head of the Thruway Authority or something. Well, what his connections were, I don't know prior to that time. But, anyway, he was, what was his thoughts about the way in which, this campus could get started and completed quicker. And it came as sort of a shot to us because we thought we were on a path whereby we were going to do it in a reasonably good and rapid fashion. But his particular reply through the governor's office and through the political concerns was that we should have sign this whole project to a single architect. And which was absolutely counter to what we were planning on at the time. And not only that, but somehow or another, he had connections with the New York Telephone Company. And the telephone company's architect was Maurice Walker Smith and Haynes at that particular time.
Thalen wasn't here on the board of...
No, but Thalen didn't come until later. I mean, he became the first chairman of the construction fund board, but this is all prior to Thalen's time, all prior to this time, all of this stuff that took place. And the next thing I know, the university, more or less, the way things were going those days, had to accept this particular proposal through the Department of Public Works that this college was going, we were just told that this college was going to be assigned to Boise Walker. Well, things got to be very, very difficult because at that time, Mr. Teagan was the university architect, Otto Teagan. I might have been director of planning and development at that time. I mean, you got to look up what the dates were. But this is back in, it's got to be back in 56 in that particular area. We had started the campus at Coa State. I mean, you know, that part took place. And, but Mr. Teagan had worked in Boyd's office. Now, he was a little bit concerned. I mean, all of this came as a total surprise to him, quite frankly. He was a little bit chagrined about possible conflicts of interest. I mean, people might think there was conflict. I remember this discussion with him. But in as much as he was totally out of the picture as far as the which way they were giving his son. But then all hell broke loose on this project. Because this is very interesting. I mean, for me, it's a very interesting, because I'm just a young shaver, you know what I mean, into the thing. And I was sort of sick about the fact that they were going to give it to the Boise office. I knew this office, and they were not, they might be fine in doing a telephone company building, I mean, in all their expertise and everything, but from a campus architectural point of view, they were the pit. I mean, they were just not the the firm to do this sort of thing. They weren't even the firm, as far as I'm concerned, to do the thing if you were to sign it to one firm and do it in a rabbit day. Well, I guess the negotiator that did this sort of thing, that played the political role on the part of Boyd's office, was, I think it was Carl Haynes. He was one of the partners. And through this guy, Brill, Haynes said that they would take the project, knowing full well that Moore and Hutchins had already had a contract on the project. And nobody even made a call to Moore and Hutchins or anything else. Well, this, in architectural circles, is the greatest crime, you know what I mean, of all time, because it's a is unethical practice. I mean, you can't go in and sign a contract, even if the owner says so. You can't, knowing full well that there's another architect that has a contract for the work. So, although we had not had our other architects assigned, we did have the contract with Moore and Hutchins. That was not canceled at all.
That was for site planning.
That was for site planning.
Yeah.
And
any buildings involved?
There were no buildings involved at that time under the Moore and Hutchins contract. No. But what we had done was we had explored with Moore and Hutchins and with Carl Larson, the Department of Public Works, and ourselves. Actually, Misty and I had made up a list of the different architectural plans that we thought we would give each one of these entities.
Yeah.
And some of the ones that we had on the list, ironically, became some of the architects that did some of the work on the campus. I mean, as it turned out. Well, anyway, they went ahead and started on their own, taking the information they had, and Warren Hutchins brought charges against them in the AIA. I don't know if you have any background on this, do you?
I have
a little. Well, anyway, the results of the thing was that it went through the American Institute of Architects unethical practice committees, and they found in favor of Moore and Hutchins, and Boyd Walker was the firm was censured. And not only that, but here was a firm in which Ralph Walker was the epitome of architects. At one time was president of the National AIA. And, I mean, this is a very prestigious firm.
Yeah.
And what happened was that Carl Haynes was ousted from the AIA for 2 years, and I think Smith was ousted for 1 year, and Ralph Walker, I mean, the other partners were censured. This is a major blow, I mean, you know, to a firm.
Yeah.
Well, as far as the initial buildings are concerned, we had written programs, but we were sick about what was going on because the designers for Boyd Walker were marginal, to say the least. And the result was, I know, I mean, I can't say we had some response, maybe we did, but I know I backed off because I went to meetings in
Boyd's office, in which they had a guy, their project architect at that time was named Roger Sprott, and I forget who their designer was, and the guy that used to have a summer place in Old Lyme, he used to talk about up in Connecticut all the time. Well, very poor designers. And the more meetings I went through, the sicker I got, and the buildings were the result of the, I mean, all you have to do is take a look and see kind of the thing. But what happened was that there was an influx of what Bowie's office turns out they were trying to do was that they didn't pay attention to what the hell we were trying to tell them about building a building of this sort, I mean, campus building. They were taking their lead from Melville. He got into the act with them, with Bowie's office. I think he might have even been influential in one way or another, that Melville, in the fact that they got it in the first place. But Melville's idea was that if he was going to give this land, what he wanted was a sleepy little Ivy League brick-covered campus in that little particular site. He didn't want the thing to be very large, and everything had to be small in scale, and you know, that kind of an atmosphere. And some of the rationale for the roofs that went on the first dormitory buildings and things like that were the result of this quasi-colonial input of the brick buildings of Melville. Well, you can see the marginal design that occurred from this. I mean, it's compared to what the Alameda University was going to be in that area. So this was the there was no stopping it at that point, and they finally let out the buildings that we know that were constructed, which was in the early days of the thing, of the campus, and that was the humanities building, the library building, the two phases of dormitories, the physics, chemistry, and biology building.
Well, you've got a good memory.
And then there was the initial engineering building, and also the initial heating plant and the service center. Oh, I know them all. That was the original buildings of plus the infirmary. The infirmary was one of those initial buildings. That was the beginning stages of the first buildings that were built under Bowie's office. But then, by that time, this, quite frankly, this was used as a classic example by State University once Rockefeller came in as to how not to do something. And I know when I had the opportunity to review with Roman of Rockefeller's office, and George Dudley, in the early days of when we were trying to get things straightened around for State University, they said, one of the greatest examples that you can use is a direction not to go with what the hell happened to us under DPW. Now, it really wasn't DPW's fault, but we were getting out from underneath DPW, so we blamed everybody. But it was used as a prime example of, hey, for Christ's sake, you don't go to university this way. That brings you up to the point where additional buildings had to take place, had to be built, and so on. By this time, that's an interesting story in itself, and I'll give you that one,
right.
Because that has something to do with Bowie's firm. But by this time, we're up to 1960-61, and we're in the process, by the time these things are built, you see, we're in the process of working out in a whole different arrangement, and what came out of this was the law that created the State University Construction Fund, which came into being in April of 1962. So, Bowie's office, at that particular time, had a contract for an administration building and student union. They still had a contract. And in the meantime, we were out getting other architectural firms to get involved in housing, and one of the first that we did was we got the Gruzin firm to do the first Earth Science Center building. You know that?
Yeah.
That was one of the next ones to go at the end of the spine down there,
That got an award.
Oh, tell you the truth, Cutting Gruzin was one of the firms that we were going to select for one of the buildings that we were going to do, as part of that, the five or six different architectural firms, the way we were going to do it in the first place. So
Lurie's office had this particular, they had not finished this up when the construction fund started. I was then given the assignment to be the liaison between the university and the construction fund, and worked in that capacity for quite a number, for a long time. Mr. Teagan, he didn't retire until 1964, but I was given that liaison responsibility. He was handling mostly community colleges at that particular time, because we had a big expansion program in that area too. And so we went down and we all agreed that this wasn't the kind of architecture that we really should be doing, and we got other firms started on new projects under the fund. But the fund thought that they could work with Lurie's office, in as much as they had contracts, to do an administration and do a union building. Hello? Oh, yes. Yep. This is a very interesting part of it, that they didn't want to, they wanted to uphold that contract with Lurie's. I wanted to cancel it because I wanted to immediately take a different tack on that. Everything got going awfully fast, and Lurie's office was sort of slow, but we got other buildings going there ahead of the buildings that they were doing, which was the administration of the student union building. All of a sudden, within the way in which the thing was set up, I had the responsibility of representing the university to approve the architectural concept for all buildings that were going through. The next thing I know, that there was advertisement in the paper for bids for two projects, which were the Lurie's office projects for administration and student union building. And somebody brought it to my attention, and I said, well, I haven't ever approved the architectural concept for those buildings. And I said, I don't know what the hell I like. Well, I called up Tony Adinolfi, and I said, something got off the track. We worked very well together at that particular time. And he said, well, let's see what's all going on. And in everyone's anxiety, and it wasn't really anybody's fault, they thought that everything was going all right, and they went ahead and advertised these two projects. Lurie's office had finished the working drawings, and they were ready. They were out for bid. So I took a look at them, and I said, I think we better have a meeting on this. And so we got George Dudley, Frank Maskey, Tony Adinolfi, myself, other people involved in the early days of the fund. We got up at 194 and down into a meeting, and it was the first time that I exercised the disapproval of the architectural concept. And so I looked at both buildings and I said, this is not what we are. I mean, we already did this kind of thing, and we all agreed that we weren't going to do it again. I said, the architectural concept for these buildings are disapproved. At that point, they rolled up the working drawings, sent a letter to Lurie's office, paid them off, and reassigned the administration and student union building to DeMars, Pecorio, and Weigel. So the buildings that are out there today, I mean, it's just an interesting story as a result. And we ended our association at that point, but it was a tough way to end things, you know what I mean, to do it with the original Lurie's firm. And so then we did the major science building.
How did DeMars, Pecorio, and Weigel work out?
Well, they were three architects that were put together sort of as a firm. I would say the strength of that particular firm was Jan Pecorio. I always felt that he was. It was Paul DeMars. They were good architects. Weigel was simply an administrative architect. I mean, he wasn't. He then showed up with Max Urban. At that particular time, I think that the administration and the student union that they did was fairly reasonable. I mean, it was all right in terms of what happened. But they did some master planning for us at that particular time, too, and then did those two buildings. Yeah. But other than that, we got several other firms involved doing other buildings. Especially, we had a firm out of Chicago doing the one just behind the library. That's chemistry, yeah.
The graduate chemistry.
That's a firm out of Chicago. And then we had
Goosen doing the physics and math building down at the end. And then, of course, we had finally Goldberg do the biology there. And we had some other people do the lecture hall center and the social science. I forget who did that one. I forget some of the work. And then plus the fact that in the meantime, we started working on all those satellite housing. We had Ross and Tabler, and then we have Gruzin do a couple of other housing projects. I mean, those the ones that are up on the Ridge Road.
Well, the architectural development of the thing was, has quite a history and story, but it's it had a lot of pitfalls.
The location, the early location of the two science buildings closest to the library was, I think, a mistake, because they are less dependent on a library than English and fine arts.
There were some problems with that in the early days, and I'll tell you what they were, ironically. Melville, everyone thought he was a great philanthropist, you see, in this property. But actually, the property was given to the state in sections, in parcels, of 60 acres. And it only could be 60 acres per year because he was writing this off as he was going around. And this was an agreement that had been made that we didn't know, that I found out about it after I found out that we had to restrict what we were doing sort of to fit within the 60, or else we had to make the description of the property such a strange thing in order to encompass the building, because we had to own the, once we let out a building for contract, we had to own the land, you see what I mean, under which had to be transferred to it. So that some of these things got pushed up a little bit too close because of that original 60 acres that was carved out in the center of this great big site that we were doing. So it was a strange way to go about doing things. For building a new campus, I think we should have done a lot better than we did. And I think we would have had we kept on our original tack. Plus the fact that some of the people that came there, John Cole and even people prior to that, their expertise was in the academic and in the development of the program. But they always interject themselves into the physical development, and regardless of what you say, you always have a tendency of, you don't want to offend anybody, you always have a tendency to try to at least accommodate them to some extent in terms of what their thoughts are. And some of the things that were done, I was talking to the people there at Sunnybrook today, and this particular, with the president, with Marburger, with the administrative people, with the provost, and with the Haynes and the people of the NIC, they were chagrined about the fact that NCON built the building that they did down at the end of the, at the dormitory complex. And I said, you know what, don't you? I said, we were bludgeoned by the campus to have NCON build that building. We, State University of New York Centrally, were opposed to having NCON come in and build that building on our campus.
NCON
owns the building down at the end of the J and H dormitories.
Oh, yes.
That building down, and they want to now build it.
Environmental conservation.
That's right. That's NCON.
Yeah.
And they now want to put an addition on that. And we're not so sure we want them to put an addition on it. I mean, they have a revocable permit on it. But it's one of these things where this has been worked out by NCON and the campus. And quite frankly, from a central planning standpoint, we said, no, we don't want NCON to be building down in this particular neck of the woods. You know what I mean? It was going to be a fly in the ointment.
At the time, that seemed a long
way off. That seemed a long way off. Well, it isn't so far now, is it?
No.
And so here's a classic example where now you have an administration that are almost looking to us and say, why the hell did you ever let them build it there? And the truth of the matter is, we were dead set against having them build it there. It was the campus that worked out the arrangement, but it was a previous administration that worked out the arrangement to have NCON come in. It happens
all the time. All the time. I think it's probably prevalent in every university. I mean, something like this occurs. could give you long stories on the medical center.
I think you need it. You need it if you've got the time and energy.
Well, I haven't got too much time, but
you take look. You go where you want to go.
Yeah.
But I'm in here in Albany. I can come back again. But the medical center, Ed Pellegrino, I don't think that he had any input on the architect selected, did he?
No. No, he didn't. No, he came after the fact.
Yeah.
No, he didn't have any input on this. That was a make you think some ways too bad. I don't think I have time enough right now to give it to you, except to say that I think it has a story in and of itself. The what occurred there, what was finally constructed there with the enormous megastructure was, again, one that was not part of the planned process of which we wanted to proceed with a medical center. Mort Gassman and I, Mort being in the program engineering and myself in the university, we'd even examined at one time the possibility of, we were asked to examine the possibility of placing the medical center at another location not too far away. We had bought that property across Nichols Road, for the intended purpose of building a medical center. Johnny Pohl never wanted it there. He wanted it right on the main campus. But we examined the possibility of putting the thing at, what the hell was the name of it? There was another facility, and I'd have to look it up to see. Beautiful site. Where the hell was that? Anyway, they had some initial facilities and so on that we could use as a nucleus, and we could build a major golf course on the site and everything else.
Yeah.
Not too far away, yeah.
Golf course is right across Nickel Road.
No. Not that. That's St. George's. I don't mean that one. I mean this other site that had the other hospital on it that was located.
Meadowbrook and...
No. I'll have to... it was DA. It was run by the DA.
Oh, that would be in Kings Park.
No.
Well, it was a site, a 40-acre site.
No. This is a big site. This is a big site. Well, anyway... What had happened on the medical center, just to give you an initial rundown on it, we started programming on the medical center, and we programmed things in such a way that we wanted to get started with basic science facilities, and we thought that the master plan for the medical center should go on a building-by-building, unit-by-unit connected complex in which you had an opportunity to build to construct a building and occupy it as you went on and built the rest of the medical center based on an overall campus plan. But when we ended up with Goldberg as the architect, which was sort of strange in itself, we had turned down a couple of firms for that particular project, and Goldberg came in and sold himself to the construction firm based on the Peter Bent Brigham facility that he was affiliated with in Harvard. Over at in Boston, and the next thing we know, he came up with a megastructure complex, and more than ever both opposed to it because we felt that this was good. I mean, you couldn't really occupy one thing because you occupied everything, right, except for the hospital, you know. And that's about the way it turned out, and it was not the intended way in which we felt we were going to proceed with the thing, so it did come out a little bit different than the...
I never did
really fully accept that as an architectural statement of medical service. I mean, personally, I never did. Yeah.
Okay. I've got work to do.
I am a knee operator.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, for your interest?
Yeah, it was years ago. I've had knee problems for years, but I had this one. Operated on July, they cut me open pretty good, July 21st, and they fixed my knee pretty good. I've got a new metal piece. No, it isn't. It's just the surface of the top of the tibia. I got a new surface, metal surface on the top, so the other part was all eroded. And they fixed my knee, but now I'm trying to get over the operation. Well, Carl, you let me know. Come back and we can go on for this for quite a while. I enjoy doing it.
Good. Well, I enjoy it too.